Rise and shine, everyone. How's it going out there? My name is Amy, and it's time for Amy's Kids Show. Wow, and I am so excited to be here today. I am coming in to the station this morning to read to you the final chapters of The Genius Under the Table by Eugene Yelchin. And we've been reading this story together for the past 5 weeks. This is week number six, and I am in here for the conclusion. So I am so glad that you are joining me, especially today. All right, and let me just get over here to the microphone and, wow, let you know that we've been reading this story for 5 weeks already, and I'm not sure how much of it you remember. Do you remember the story is about when Eugene was growing up behind the Iron Curtain in the USSR, the former Soviet Union, what is today called Russia? Well, when Eugene was growing up there, his name was Eugeny, and he lived in one room with his brother Victor, his mom and dad, and his grandma. And they lived in an apartment where there happens to be a bunch of other families, as well as a spy. Do you guys remember Blinov, the spy, the KGB spy? Well, this story has a lot of really interesting characters, and today we're going to be especially celebrating Eugeny and his dad, because they are both going to find courage in these last few chapters. And I listened to an interview with the author, and he wants us all to remember that this is why he wrote the book. He wants us to remember not to take our basic liberties for granted. Our liberties, our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And he wants us to know that in order to achieve freedom, because he knows this, he has achieved freedom. He not only left the USSR, but came here to the United States, and then also learned to become free and to write this kind of truth that we find in this book here. He said that in order to find freedom, he had to overcome fear and find courage. So that's what we're learning from Eugeny and his dad this week. But I do want to let you guys know that I'm sure you already are aware of this, that some of the best stories are sad, right? They have some sad parts. And I've been talking with some kids this week, and they agreed. They all could think of some pretty sad stories that they really like, actually. So I want you to know this story is very realistic. There's going to be some sad parts, even some family arguments. And a spy is going to have a change of heart. So it's not all bad. We all know life can have some danger, right? But if we get through it together, it'll be fine. Here we go, guys.
Where the dreamy Volga flows, there's a lonely Russian rose, gazing tenderly down upon her knees. Where a baby's brown eyes glisten, listen. Every night you hear her croon a Russian lullaby. Just a little plaintive tune where baby starts to cry. Rock goodbye, my baby, somewhere there may be a land that's free for you and me and a Russian. Thank you.
Well, folks, we are ready for the conclusion of The Genius Under the Table by Eugene Yelchin. We are going to be reading the last chapters today, and there is a lot that is going to happen here with Eugene, or Eugenie, as he was called when he was a kid. And he's, if where we left off was Eugenie was taking some art classes, private art tutoring with Tatiana Bruni. And he's been learning about how artists who play by the rules, who follow the rules, are the only ones allowed to perform or show their art in Russia, in the USSR, Soviet Russia, behind the Iron Curtain when Eugenie was growing up. That was all his government would allow. And so I, this book, we've been learning a lot about the art that was happening behind the Iron Curtain. there was a lot of ballet. There was a lot of painting. We're even going to hear from the symphony orchestra here in just a moment. Boy, we are traveling all around, right? And the poetry. Let's also remember the poetry that we've been learning about. And Eugenie's dad really loves poetry. He loves poetry so much, but unfortunately his government won't let him read it. And I've actually been reading some of it myself and reading about these Russian poets behind the Iron Curtain and the danger they were in for writing poetry that spoke the truth. It was very, very dangerous for them. They could be arrested, they could be killed, and Eugenie's dad really loves Russian poetry, but it is very difficult to get his hands on those forbidden books. So he has convinced Eugenie maybe guilt-tripped him, some people might say, into gathering a bunch of paper so that he can get a stamp so that his dad can get this poetry book. So the Russian government at the time makes it very difficult to get these books. And so this is what Eugenie has had to do. He's had to gather up extra paper, not just the paper he had to turn in for recycling already, just for being a good communist student, but socialist student, actually. It was called a socialist student activity. He had to gather up all this paper, but also we learned about how that paper is just put in a big pile to rot, right? Everybody's newspapers, their old photo albums, their books, is just thrown away. So the people are really left with nothing. And Eugenie has questions. He has lots of questions. Who is the man in the photo album at his house whose picture is cut out? Who is that man and why is his picture cut out? Well, this week, Eugenie is going to grow in his courage. And so is his dad, actually. And we're going to learn a little bit about how the lack of freedom behind the Iron Curtain really limits people's choices about healthcare, for example. You know, can we see the doctor that we want to see? Can we get the healthcare we want to get? Well, it's all here, guys, in this book. So thank you for joining me. This is a wonderful story, Behind the Iron Curtain, The Genius Under the Table by Eugene Yelchin. Chapter 43. When I came home, Mom, Dad, and Grandma were watching the Leningrad Symphony Orchestra on our new TV, the first color set in our communalka. It came with an antenna that did not work, so Dad had to rig his own, a thick black wire snaking out of the back of the TV and climbing up the wall to hang from the ceiling like a spider web. Take off your coat, darling, Mom said, and go wash your hands. Why should his hands be dirty? Grandma said. The boy is wearing mittens. What took you so long, Eugenie? Dad said. He did not look at me, but I knew he was dying to know if I'd been out collecting paper for him. Mom knew it too. In this weather, they make children gather papers, she said to Dad. Should that be allowed, huh, communist? Dad began messing with the TV antenna. To the drum roll from the symphony orchestra, I said, Was my grandfather an enemy of the people? All three stared at me in astonishment. "Was it you who cut him out of all the pictures in our album, Grandma? Or did you do it, Mom? Was it like a school project or something?" "Oy vey," Grandma said, and clutched at her heart. "What are you talking about?" Mom said. "Did Stalin want to send all the Jews to Siberia so he could start World War III?
"Yeah, Eugenie," Dad shouted.
"Was that one of Stalin's mistakes, Dad? Can somebody please tell me the truth? Why can't you ever tell me the truth?"
"Enough."
Dad's fist banged on top of the TV set so hard that the wire shot out from it and the spider web dropped from the ceiling onto the table, set for dinner.
"It's all your fault," Dad shouted at Mom, admiring those traitors, those defectors. "Or is it that he's learning what he's learning at your Bruni's house? I warned you, she's not to be trusted." He glared at me. "Look here, son, I will explain it to you simply."
He cleared his throat as if he was about to deliver a speech.
"Under the direction of the Communist Party, the people of our mighty socialist motherland are building a communist society with its abundant and joyous life, while the capitalist oppressors..."
He smacked the TV again and shouted at me,
"When did you last draw a picture, I would like to know? Your new sketchbook is empty. I looked. We didn't get it for free, you know. Mother and I have to work very hard so you can develop your artistic talent."
Dad was shouting and banging his fist on the TV and changing the subject. But he was only pretending to be angry. Really, I think he was scared. All three were. Stalin was long dead, and they were still scared of him. I laid the stamped coupon Dad was hoping for on the table. I had no time to draw Dad. I was too busy collecting paper. Chapter 44. Next morning, Grandma woke me up long before the alarm rang.
"Go take him the scarf."
"What? What scarf?"
"Do I know what scarf? Scarf. He only has one. Your father rushed off in such a blitz, he forgot it."
"I have to go to school, Grandma."
"School can wait."
I looked at the window. Pitch black outside. Snowing hard. "Where's Mom?"
"At her lunatic place, Vaganovka. Where else would she be?"
"Dad's at work?"
"What work? He's in line. You gave him the coupon. He's in line."
"In line? How early did he leave? It's not even 7 yet.
He left last night."
"He was standing in line all night?"
"For a book. He is standing. Can you eat a book? Can you drink a book? He'll catch the death of cold for that book. Go give the scarf to your Mishugana father. I worry a little."
Chapter 45. The line to exchange stamped coupons for a book of poems by Osip Mandelstam was so long that I could have probably read the whole book in the time that it took me to find my dad in that line. The air was so thick with falling snow that everyone looked like a snowman. Finally, I saw him. Dad must have been in a big hurry to get there because he had forgotten more than his scarf. His overcoat, hat, and gloves were also missing. Tiny icicles sprouted from his eyebrows and two clumps of frozen snot blocked his nostrils.
"What are you doing here, Eugenie? You brought my scarf. How sweet you are, my dear."
He tried to wrap the scarf around his neck, but his fingers were too stiff. I tied the scarf for him.
"Thank you, Eugenie. Thank you. Much better. I'm awfully sorry for raising my voice at you last night. Awfully sorry. Please forgive me, my dear." Why don't you go home, Dad? I'll keep your place in line.
No, no, no. You must go to school. How are your grades? Good? I'm not surprised with your talent.
He stumbled, swayed forward, and bumped against the man standing in front of him.
I beg your pardon, comrade.
The comrade did not turn around. He was asleep on his feet.
Come closer, Eugenie. I want to tell you something.
Dad leaned into me. He was shivering and clacking his teeth.
It's about my pencil, Eugenie. Remember? You were stealing it to draw under the table.
Yes, Dad, I remember.
After you stopped taking it from me, I thought, well, Comrade Yelchin, now that you have your pencil at night, you can write some brilliant rhymes.
Rhymes? You're a poet, Dad?
Some poet I am. I love poetry like your mama loves ballet, but... He sighed. I can't be a poet.
Why not, Dad? You don't have talent for it? He was leaning into me with all his weight, blinking his snow-plastered eyelashes very fast, as if to keep from crying.
Remember what I told you the day we went to the bathhouse? Before your Vaganovka audition?
About Mandelstam?
No, Eugenie, about truth. To be a poet, you can't be afraid to tell the truth.
That's it, Eugenie. That's simple. I'm afraid to tell the truth. He pushed himself away from me, swayed, and leaned against the back of the comrade in front of him.
But what about Mandelstam, Dad? Poetry is so respected in Russia that poets are killed for it. Is that true?
Dad stared at me for a moment, and he nodded. A tiny little nod I could have missed if I was not looking closely.
So was he, I said. Was he what?
Killed for it? Dad's blue lips moved, but no words came out.
Say it, Dad. Say it so I can hear.
He nodded again and whispered,
yes, Eugenie, he was.
See, Dad? You can be a poet. You just told the truth. He smiled.
Thanks for the scarf, Eugenie. You run to school now.
I want to stay with you, Dad.
Go, go. We'll read Mandelstam together tonight.
Chapter 46. 2 days later, my dad died from pneumonia at hospital number 28 on Decembrists Street. He had made it home with the book of Mandelstam's poems, but he was too sick to read them to me. In the middle of the night, Mom sent Victor to fetch a doctor from a nearby clinic. The doctor he brought back turned out to be the mother of Yurka Semenov, one of my classmates.
Nothing to worry about, she said. Simple cold.
Yurka's mother was sleepy and annoyed that we made her come out of her room for no reason. Dad became delirious by morning. We could not understand what he was saying, but I thought he was reciting his favorite poems. Victor went out to get a taxi, and we took Dad to the hospital, number 28, which was overcrowded and dirty. No bed was available for my dad. He died on a cot in a hallway, with people walking by and talking in loud voices. My classmate Yurka Semenov
had nothing to do with his mother being a bad doctor. But we did not speak again, as if he felt responsible for his mother's incompetence, while I felt responsible for my dad's death. On a frosty February morning, my dad was buried in the Jewish section of the Leningrad Southern Cemetery. The Soviet Army contributed a military honor to the funeral because much of Dad's life was spent in military service. He had reached the rank of major and was awarded the Order of Red Banner for outstanding courage in the battlefield. But when our government decided that persons of Jewish ethnicity should not be allowed to hold high military ranks, Dad was discharged. An officer led four privates armed with AK-47s to the freshly dug grave. They fired three shots in the air. My mother fainted and missed the casket being lowered into the grave. Two men shoveled dirt into the hole. When the frozen lumps of earth clobbered the coffin's lid below the ground, I felt that someone was looking at me from behind. I turned around. A man in a shabby black coat was peeking from behind an old Jewish tombstone. It was Blinov, our old neighbor, the KGB informer. Chapter 47. Except for the soldiers, everyone came home with us after the funeral. Family friends crowded our room and the hallway, talking about my dad in low voices. Our neighbors came with food and drinks for everyone. Even though Dad was just another Yid to them, our neighbors had always liked him. Nobody invited Blinov, but he showed up anyway, about an hour later, drunk. Grandma and I were alone in the kitchen when Blinov staggered in through the front door. He still had a key.
Don't I just know how you feel, boy, he said to me. Your daddy, a fine man he was, a true communist.
We had not seen Blinov since he had left for Canada to spy on Baryshnikov. Nobody knew what had happened to him, but something must have happened, because he had aged so much, I could barely recognize him. Even his KGB eyes, clear, cold, colorless splinters of ice, which had scared me in the past, had become bleary and watery, as if the ice had melted. He wobbled toward the hallway, but Grandma stood in his path.
What do you want? Condolences to the widow, Blinov said. The widow he wants, Grandma said. You're drunk.
Blinov nodded, accepting.
They kicked me out of the state security, grandmother, he said. Failed to perform duty to the motherland. I care? Go home, Grandma said. But listen, grandmother, what could I do? Did you see his thighs, the muscles on them? Even by car, you couldn't catch him.
What is he talking about? Grandma said to me. I think he's talking about Baryshnikov, Grandma. Swaying, Blinov rummaged through his pockets, found a pack of cigarettes, shook one out, and stuck it in the corner of his mouth.
The night after the ballet was over, a crowd of them, foreigners, was waiting for him outside. They had to have his signature, see? I'm in the car with the others, watching him signing his name. Right away, I knew that something was wrong. See, he's a smiley type, but no smile on him in that crowd. I said to the chief, he looks jumpy.
Blinov was slapping at his pockets, looking for matches. He could barely stand on his feet. The cigarette was stuck to his lower lip, bobbing up and down as he spoke.
"Next, we couldn't see him anymore. Where did he go?" the chief said to me. "Go get him, idiot." So I went, pushed through the crowd, around the corner, and what do you know? He's running! "Misha," I holler, "where are you off to?" The traitor keeps running. "And how?" I tried, but I couldn't catch him. No weapon on me, see? Not allowed. I could have shot him, no problem.
He found the matches, struck one, and lit his cigarette.
"Tell the widow, grandmother, that her friend Blinov failed to stop her Baryshnikov from defecting, for which Blinov was punished accordingly. Before we went, I was promised a private apartment, a personal car. Got this instead."
He opened his mouth to show us. Half of his teeth were gone.
"I'm here secretly, see? Incognito. I'm not allowed in Leningrad. Came back to beg for my job back. Do you think they'd give it to me?"
"You need that job like a hole in your head," Grandma said. "Go now."
Blinov nodded, dropped his cigarette to the floor, squashed it with his shoe. He was halfway out when he stopped and turned around.
"That swastika on the door, remember? Beat Yids, huh? Save Mother Russia. I wrote that. Not that boy your grandson beat up on. The order came from my superiors. So I did it. I swear, Grandmother, I felt bad scaring you. You're a nice old lady. I always liked you. But I had no choice, see? Got to follow the rules."
Chapter 48. 2 years passed, but still, we could not get used to life without Dad. Every Sunday morning, Mom and I boarded a bus and headed to the Leningrad Southern Cemetery, where Mom laid fresh flowers on Dad's grave and spoke to him for hours. She always began with talk of Baryshnikov.
"Misha is doing well for himself in America. Remember, you were saying you were right. Already he has danced more ballets than in all his years at the Kirov. Are you surprised with Misha's talent?"
While Mom looked for the handkerchief in her purse, she named all the ballets Baryshnikov was dancing in America. Then she would wipe her tears and move on to Victor.
"You'd be so proud of your oldest. He got married. Yes, to Irina, his figure skating partner. They are leading dancers at the Leningrad Ballet on Ice. Can you imagine? We don't see them much because they're always touring foreign countries. They're allowed."
Mom would tell about Victor's new private one-bedroom apartment that had a balcony. Not a big balcony, but big enough to step outside for a breath of fresh air. From that balcony, Victor could see his new car parked down below.
"Who in our family ever owned a car?" Mom would say. "Nobody I know, but your oldest, he has one."
Then Mom would tell Dad about Grandma.
"Mama is a little worse, but with her indigestion, what can we expect? A miracle? Now she talks Yiddish back to the TV like they understand Yiddish."
Often, while talking to Dad, Mom would smile, but there was so much pain in her smile that I had to look away.
"Eugenie, I don't know. Tatiana Georgievna recommends he try for the Academy of Theater Arts. Maybe he can become a theater designer like her. Why not? With his artistic talent? But I worry a little. They're taking fewer Jews at colleges now. Like you said, Israel and America are stirring the pot, making it hard for sure. Hard for us here. Some Jews can't stand it anymore and go to Israel for good. But don't you worry, darling. We'll never leave you behind. Next, I would take a stroll among the Jewish graves. Mom needed time alone to talk to Dad about herself. The last chapter. Chapter 49. It was on one of those long bus trips to the Leningrad Southern Cemetery that I asked Mom about my grandfather again. What happened to him? Was he really arrested? Please, don't ask me, honey. Your father didn't want you kids to know. But why, Mom? She looked away from me and stared through the window. Huge portraits of our aging leaders, propped up along the side of the road, glared as we passed. Where we live, Eugenie, Mom said, it's safer that way, you know? No, I don't know, Mom. I don't. Why does it make it safer not to know what happened to your own grandfather? Did I raise my voice at her? Maybe I did. Because a man sitting in front of us got up and moved away. The bus driver was staring at me in the rearview mirror. Mom, her eyes swelled with tears, was digging into her purse for a handkerchief. I'm sorry, Mom. Please don't be upset. I'll never ask you again. I promise. And I kept my promise. I never asked her again. I never found out what happened to my grandfather. Even our photo album soon disappeared, and I never saw those cut-up family photos again. Grandma must have hidden it somewhere. Our past, my family's past, as well as the past of my country, had so many terrible secrets that my questions caused nothing but fear in people I loved. I saw that fear in the eyes of my dad and my mom and my grandma, but also in the eyes of strangers I passed in the streets every day. Our Soviet citizens' eyes were often half shut and glossed over, as if they would rather stare inside their frightened selves than at the menacing world outside. But there were also other eyes in Leningrad. Eyes that shone with curiosity and passion. Eyes starved for something more than our drab existence. I had seen such eyes in lines waiting for Baryshnikov to dance. And I had seen such eyes in our libraries, our theaters, our museums, and our concert halls. Those curious and passionate eyes made me happy. Yes, in spite of everything, I was happy. Our Soviet force of gravity was already losing its hold on me. I was eager and impatient to fly. Our past lay hidden in darkness, but my future seemed dazzlingly bright. The end.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, folks, for joining me for the conclusion of The Genius Under the Table by Eugene Yelchin. And I have this Russian, it's the Russian Shostakovich Symphony Number 8 in Leningrad. I'm playing this dramatic music behind the story today while I was reading the conclusion because, well, first of all, did you notice that this music was in the story? Did you notice that? That when Eugenie came home in the first chapter I read today, his family was listening and watching this, the orchestra play the symphony on the television, which was a new TV for them. They hadn't had a color television before. So it was very exciting. And they were listening to this very exciting, dramatic music when Eugenie comes bursting in, right, with his big burning question that he has finally found the courage to ask. He was so brave. And I just love that part where he finds the courage. And I also love that his father found the courage to speak the truth. Did you hear that part too? So this story has been a very, very, very interesting and moving story for me to read. And I've been learning a lot about Eugene Yelchin. I've been listening to interviews with him and why he wrote this book. I've learned a little bit about poetry, Russian poetry. I did look up Mandelstam, the poet who Eugenie's dad was standing in line waiting to get a copy of the book of poetry that Mandelstam had written. And it was dangerous times. Those were dangerous times. And actually that poet, Mandelstam, died in prison. He was arrested for writing poems that spoke the truth. So Eugenie's dad was you know, justified in being afraid to speak the truth. However, Eugene Yelchin has made very clear in one of the interviews that I was listening to with him that he wrote these books that he's been writing, not just The Genius Under the Table, but other books too, so that children here in the United States and all around the world can realize that the difference between being free and not being free is fear and love, right? Fear and courage. When we feel fear and we act from fear, we are not free. And when we act from love and courage and truth, we are. And that's the difference. And so even though our governments seem to be conspiring against all of us, right? They're teaming up. They pretend to be going to war, but it seems more like they're teaming up against us, the people. And the cool part to remember is what Eugenie realizes at the end of the story, right? The hope and courage and curiosity in the eyes of the people around him, right? That's what makes him happy. He says, those curious and passionate eyes made me happy. Yes, in spite of everything, I was happy. Our Soviet force of gravity was already losing hold on me. I was eager and impatient to fly. Our past lay hidden in darkness, but my future seemed dazzlingly bright. And that's certainly the message that this book gives me. And I hope it gives you the same message and many, many more messages. I would love to talk with you someday about what you thought of the book. So coming up next, we have a special shout out to Eugene's dad. It's a song, A Father's Day Lullaby by Billy Joel, which is just turned out to be just perfect for the story that we just read. And then we're going to celebrate America and the United States, because that's where Eugene is now, and that's where he feels free. He feels way more free than he did over behind the Iron Curtain, for sure. So we're going to do a little shout out to Eugene as well with a song. We're going to celebrate freedom, and then I have a little clip describing another book by Eugene Yelchin, which maybe if you liked this one, maybe you would like to get another one by Eugene. He's written quite a few and illustrated quite a few. Well, this one is going to be a preview with his co-author for a book he co-wrote called Assassination of Brangwaine Spurge. And it's similar to this story we just read. It's about spies, right? And enemies finding out that they're actually friends and things like that. But it takes place with goblins and things like that. It's more of a fantasy. So if you like fantasy, maybe you would like to read that. I know I'm going to get a copy myself. So thank you for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. We're going to finish up with the symphony and then celebrate some fathers, basically. Fathers and everybody out there, you're the greatest. Thanks for joining me.
My angel, time to close your eyes and save these questions for another day. I think I know what you've been asking me. I think you know what I've been trying to say. I promised I would never leave you. You should always know, wherever you may go, no matter where you are, I never will be far away. Good night, my angel, now it's time to sleep, and still so many things I want to say. Remember all the songs you sang for me when we went sailing on an emerald bay. And like a boat out on the ocean, I'm rocking you to sleep. The water's dark and inside this ancient heart, you'll always be a part of me. Good night, my angel, now it's time to dream, and dream how wonderful your life will be. Someday your child may cry, and if you sing this lullaby, then in your heart there will always be a part of me. Someday we'll all be gone, but lullabies go on and on. They never die, that's how you and I will be.
Well, we're going to sing a tune here. It's one I first remember learning in grade school, and I'll bet most of us here first learned it in grade school, too. And but always in the grade school books, not all the verses were printed. And but there was one verse I learned later over at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and I've remembered it. Nobody living will ever stop me as I go walking my freedom highway. Nobody living will make me turn back. This land was made for you and me.
This land is yours.
Yeah.
Here is elfin historian Brangwyn Spurge, scholar of all things goblin. Why is he being catapulted across the Bonecruel Mountains into goblin territory? Because there is no one better equipped to bring a peace offering to Gog the Evil One, Dark Lord of the Goblins. And here's his host, goblin archivist Verfel, scholar of all things elf. And here is Verfel's adorable pet Ichthyon, Skardabek. These two scholars should be the best of friends. But in the land of the Dark Lord Gog, spies are everywhere and no one can be trusted. Both Brangwyn Spurge and Verfel, elf and goblin, are pawns in a bigger game, each with his own secret mission. One sends pictures of everything he sees, but the pictures seem to contain many errors. The other is questioned in secret in the dark of night and has every reason to lie and betray. Which one is telling the truth? And can they find friendship in common in time to save themselves and their enchanted nations from all-out war? I, M.T. Anderson, and my collaborator, Eugene Yelchin, created this book as a tribute to all of those brave writer-explorers in the ancient world who voyaged into unknown lands and tried to understand the cultures they found there. People like Marco Polo and Xuanzang and Herodotus.
Explorers? This is a spy thriller. Think espionage. Think the spy who came in from the cold for the younger set.
But Eugene, at its heart, it's really a tragic meditation on how societies which have been trained to hate one another for generations can actually come to see eye to eye.
A tragedy. A laugh out loud misadventure of two fools blinded by ideology and propaganda is not a tragedy, sir. It's a comedy.
Sure, Eugene, whatever. Basically, we just wondered why goblins get such a bad rap in Tolkien and all those other fantasy novels, and why they're always seen as faceless masses who just deserve to be slaughtered, and what it's actually like to live in the barren realm of an oppressive evil lord.
Who's Tolkien? Never heard of him. I don't care for fantasy.
Okay, is this conversation over? I have to get a root canal.
Root canal? My first root canal was done in Siberia by a KGB dentist without anesthetic. Wait, Anderson, where are you going?
Well, folks, I think that very well describes what we've been up to here, reading The Genius Under the Table by Eugene Yelchin for the last 6 weeks. Today we concluded it, and I love the way Eugene, the author, just explained, right, that life can be a comedy, right? If you look at it the right way, it's a comedy, but then as his co-author said, but it's also a tragedy, and that is true. And what does that mean? Well, that means that life, tragedy means, you know, hard bits, dangerous bits, scary bits, sad bits. And we did have a few of those in the story today in the conclusion. It's really hard when we lose people we love. And then also in the story at the same time, we also found a lot of hope and courage and even humor, which is what I love most, I think, about Eugene Yelchin and his writing. And he really wants us to remember, guys, us living here in the United States, where maybe we didn't grow up behind the Iron Curtain. We don't know how horrible it can be to lose all of our freedoms. He wants us to know how important life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness really are. And that it takes courage, it takes overcoming our fear to make sure that we hold on to those rights. And these days, guys, I'm really excited that we got to read this story. I'm so grateful that I found this book to read right now. As our countries, Russia and the United States, our governments are being very mean to each other and being very mean to us. And they've actually been both acting very similarly. I just watched a little clip about people, you know, shopping in Russia and living in Russia. It looks a lot like the United States now. They have a lot of freedoms of expression, but not all. And here in the United States, we've been losing ours. And both of our countries are starting to look a lot alike. Less freedom of privacy, less freedom for having the papers and books, and that's something called censorship. When our right to information is taken away, our right to speak to each other, to express ourselves, to ask questions and get our questions answered, to learn about what we want, to work and do the jobs that we want. I mean, we have doctors in Vermont who are not going to be allowed to be doctors anymore because they're saying things that go against the government, that don't follow the rules. I mean, this is where we're at, guys. This is serious, okay? We need to all come together and realize that our governments are not us, right? We the people, we are all together. And we can help keep each other safe and healthy. We can work together. We can remember that we are not divided. Don't let them divide us and make us feel like we're enemies. We're not, guys. We are all friends. And I care so much about you. Thank you for joining me on Amy's Kids Show as we keep celebrating freedom. Have a great week. Know that you're the greatest. Use your freedom to discover and express your true talents and your questions. All right, guys, take care. Thanks for joining me. There once were slaves in Egypt.